95 BFM.
That was Jonah's Policewoman. You can catch Jonah's Policewoman at the Ray Freemund Centre in March. And very shortly, I just want to mention, this is, I'm very excited. We're going to be joined by Kristen Hirsch of Throwing Muses. She's in the country to play two shows, one tomorrow night at the Vic in Devonport and the other the following night at the Tuning Fork. You can get tickets from Plus One. But first, what we're going to do, Throwing Muses have got a brand new album out, which was out on Friday. We're going to play the opening track from the record, Summer of Love, and then we're going to get Kristen on the line for a bit of a chat. So stay tuned.
Streak of yikes, lighting your sinking up. Really, truly ain't a walk of shame, but a summer of love. I finally life.
Hot off the press, Throwing Muses with A Summer of Love off Moonlight Concessions, which came out on Friday, and we should have on the line Kristen Hirsch. Good morning.
Good morning.
First and foremost, thank you so much for taking the time this morning to have a chat to us ahead of your shows. There's two shows in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, one tomorrow night at the Vic in Devonport, such a wonderful, intimate venue to be playing, and then tomorrow downtown at the Tuning Fork, on Friday the 21st of March. How exciting! And Kristen, how does it feel to be out on the road, I guess, just days after the release of Throwing Muses' 11th album, Moonlight Concessions?
It's really nice to run away from an album release and be allowed to just play music and remember that I'm allowed to focus. Having never been about attention, I don't want to be looked at. I'm a mammal. I find it kind of threatening. And yet, I haven't really been able to do the math that would allow me to play guitar for my whole life without letting anyone else hear it. It doesn't pay very well.
Yes, you got to get out.
So I learned to swallow the attention part, and that's cool, but I make sure that's somebody else's job. And to be here with y'all, we're you're also musically literate and funny and grounded. It just, it's the sweetest place in the world to be when you're trying to avoid attention.
It must be quite a nice feeling to have the record, the new Throwing Muses record out at, and also be out, you know, doing your own thing. Are you going to be bringing some songs into your set from the Throwing Muses album, or will it all be your solo work?
I play a lot of Throwing Muses songs. Like I'm not all that bright, and I can't remember what songs are on what records or what songs are I played with which bands sometimes. So, and I also don't have a set list. So I just sit down and I read the room, which sounds like I might be more self-conscious than I am. It's actually, I think the equation is something that happens between the audience and the performer if the performer isn't performing. If you're a conduit of sorts, then the music needs to be this hover body between y'all. And when the audience is participating energetically, the set list would no longer make sense. You have to be in the moment. And then I'll just pull songs out of the air and say, oh, we need this one right now. And sometimes I'll read a passage from one of my books for the same reason, which maybe it makes me sound groovier than I am too. I'll play whatever needs to be played, I suppose. And if it doesn't, it's bitter medicine for the audience, and I don't want to go there either.
Now, your songwriting has always had an almost stream of consciousness feel, with such raw emotion and vivid imagery. Is there a process for capturing that intensity in a song, or does it just happen?
Yeah, the superpower of invisibility. Unself-consciousness is where actual music lies, and we don't love that in the recording industry, which is considered either an art or an entertainment industry, meaning either snob appeal or bandwagon appeal, you know, pretense or lowest common denominator. But real music sits somewhere else in this space of, it has to be stream of consciousness. Otherwise, you're applying your fingerprint in such a way as to obscure the original message. And you want to use your own human lens because you're here with senses. But other than that, if something came from the part of me that thinks, that is self-applied, then it would be smaller than me. And nobody needs that. We need something that's between us, that communicates without self-consciousness. So I've always been far more comfortable sitting in music without my mind and letting my mind follow. But then you end up relying on people like yourself, professional listeners, to tell me what it's like. I don't know what the music is like unless you tell me. I'm uniquely positioned to not be able to hear this stuff.
Yes. I mean, your guitar playing is such a unique energy. Did you ever consciously develop it, or was it just how you naturally played?
That's a really good question. I started playing when I was 9, and I would have played earlier, but my father wouldn't let me touch his guitar because I was a kid. So I would come home from school, and it was hidden behind the couch, and I would just stare at it until he got really annoyed and said, okay, I'll show you a few chords. And he showed me some major chords, like 3 major chords, and I was instantly bored. And I said, that's cool, that's red and blue and yellow, but I want to know aquamarine and burgundy. And, he's looking at me like I'm nuts. And he said, all right, handed me the guitar and said, it's yours, play colors. And I did. I played a bunch of colors until I thought, this is my thing. I'm obsessed with this instrument, and began taking classical guitar, which I took for many years. And it sort of dissolved my language in a rigidity of rules, which it isn't, that's not really what it's for, but it can have that effect. And I was loving guitar as a hobby, and my fingers were facile, and my ability to disappear was still facile, but I was losing my sonic vocabulary. And I quit classical guitar and thought, I'm gonna go back to the island where I was born, where if I built this guitar out of freaking coconuts, I would know how to play it. And that's what throwing muses is an attempt at. I was 12 when I started throwing muses, so it wasn't all that long before I found a language that I was probably born to play.
Wow. Now, you've, as sort of touched on earlier in the conversation, you've written books alongside your music. How does writing prose compare to songwriting for you? Does one influence the other?
Yeah, music is the thing, you know, capital T. And prose I tumbled into because I had a book deal really while my writing wasn't elegant yet. It was clever, I want to say. And I hate clever. I don't think there's a place in this world for clever. So for 2 years, I had a clever book that I hated. And the next 2 years, it had found its voice, and I followed the book around, and I realized prose elegance is in its ability to communicate with clarity and color, whereas music is a visceral thing. And I was still engaging in melody and rhythm in my prose, but at this point, my prose has gotten more and more like music and lyrics, to the point where people might not know what my books are about. But the elegance is in its clarity. And so I do love to take music to a more communicative place. I've been trying to speak music to people for so many years, and we've been inundated with music industry, recording industry product, which is not music for the most part. So very few of us speak that language, which has to bypass the mind, which has to bypass commerce, the attention economy, all of those things. It is by definition a spiritual endeavor. And I don't mean that in a lofty way. I mean that in a low, visceral way. So prose can take that ability to communicate and say, and give with it, the way music gives. But people don't, they have to speak that language, or they're not going to take that gift. Like I say, that's when it becomes bitter medicine. It's not going to help you. It's just going to hurt your feelings.
Just on the industry side of things, the music world has changed drastically since Throwing Muses' early days. What are the biggest shifts you've noticed for artists within the industry?
I'm not sure there's a place for artists in the industry. I think it's a different thing. And that's why I left. I had to fight my way out of my Warner Brothers contract. I tried breaking up Throwing Muses. I did everything I could to escape something that I felt I was ill-suited to do, which was essentially turn my back on music and turn my back on women and pretend that we are fashion, that we are product. You know, it doesn't work that way. They don't let you go. They try to destroy you, and they can't. They couldn't do that to us. I never made a penny off of any of my records, but that was obviously not the point, and that was their point. And I started my noise rock band, 50 Foot Wave, as a DIY experiment in removing myself from an industry that has had very little to do with music. We'll slip it in, you know, meaning is there. We're humans with hearts, but vanity and soul are just simply not going to be in the same room at the same time. So now we're seeing the industry shatter, and it seems like celebrity is played out, right? Which is awesome. I know so many people who refer to themselves as celebrities who haven't heard of each other, which has got to be great, right?
Now, just on 50 Foot Wave, obviously sitting in the heavier realm of things compared to your solo work and Throwing Muses, what itch does 50 Foot Wave scratch as a project for you?
That's a great way of putting it. All of them. It's my happy place. I had these songs that wanted to be, the ocean, just wild and out of control, and yet the musician has to control that. And I thought the sound was only in my head. I was describing this drumming technique to a guitar tech, saying, I want to just push a tight kit down a flight of stairs. I need it to sound like that. And
yes.
And he said, that's Rob Ayler's in LA. And I said, no, it's not. It's not possible. It's not a real thing. And he said, no, it's Rob Ayler's. And it was. So I took my bass player, Bernard George, from Throwing Muses, and we started a trio with Rob Ayler's. And it's, you know, secret music is my favorite music, obviously. But we, in releasing this music for free, we're a cooperative. Everything is just volunteered. And we lived on the road just to see if we could work it. And Billboard magazine called me after we did a 2 million download record called Free Music,
wow.
Meaning,
wow.
You know, free the music, you know, from the almighty dollar, because we're such goofy commies. And I talked to this poor kid working for Billboards who is saying, you can't do this. You have to give us catalog numbers. You have to send us the music. I was saying, no. We have nothing to do with the recording industry. That's the whole point. We just slotted into Noise Rock and we're going to tour, and that's fine. Just, you know, leave us alone. And he said, we can't do that. 2 million is a big number. And he said, how much money did you make? And I said, none. And he said, oh, then it's fine. So we're sort of laughing together. It's just so ludicrous. They're trying to measure money and they're calling it measuring music. And I'm saying, you all don't have any music in your industry. That by definition, you don't want music. Warner Brothers told me this. They said, we don't want music because people love music, and people who love things can't be told what to buy. We want to sell product to people who just sort of like trends. And I said, yeah, that's why I don't belong here. And they're like, yeah, we know. So there's nothing wrong with any of the humans here. It's just money running the show becomes this weird machine that we all work for. And I just had to do the right thing and disappear myself. I don't know that it helps anyone but me, but you know, I'm working. You and I are talking today and I get to be here today.
Yes. Now we should mention Kristen Hirsch here in Aotearoa, New Zealand for four shows. The first being tomorrow night, Thursday, the 20th of March at the Vic in Devonport. Wonderful intimate venue for it. And Friday night down at the Tuning Fork in Auckland City. You can get your tickets from plusone.co.nz. Kristen, what can people expect from tomorrow night's show?
I don't know. I've never been to one.
Yeah.
I just, my whole value proposition is focus. And so when I focus, I could be in a basement or playing Glastonbury, or, you know, I do exactly the same thing when I play everywhere I go. And I personally haven't really experienced it, because if I don't disappear, the song isn't there, if that makes any sense.
Yes. Kristen Hirsch, thank you so much for talking to 95BFM this morning.
Thank you, Johnny. It was so nice of you to have me for breakfast.
We shall chat to you. We'll see you performing tomorrow night and also Friday, the Vic Devonport and the Tuning Fork. Thank you so much and all the best for the shows.
Thank you so much, dear.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Seashells under his crown. Come back, Mr. Bones, to the crab shack we call home. If I gave in, we'd have today. What more were we gonna have anyway? We'll be right back.
What more are we gonna have? Anyway, it is.